MLB and ESPN are breaking up. This might be the end of Sunday Night Baseball. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Friday, February 21st, your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on the Twitter machine. And Troy, I want to get to our projected winner of the AL West, the Texas Rangers. I want to get to Aaron Boone's new deal. And we actually saw some baseball yesterday. But first, a development in our ability to see baseball in the future. ESPN and Major League Baseball have agreed to, quote, mutually agreed, there you go, to end the national television deal after this 2025 season. They had the ability to opt out to do it. It would have run through 2028. They've decided to go ahead and end it. The league's not happy with how some of the stuff was going. ESPN's not happy with what they're paying. But if ESPN does not pick up baseball rights again, is it just going to kind of suck to lose the institution that has been Sunday Night Baseball?
I mean, yeah, it is. It's not going to be great to not have Sunday Night Baseball anymore if that does, in fact, come to an abrupt end. But at the same time, outside of Sunday Night Baseball, I am 100% in agreement with Rob Manfred, because ESPN barely does anything to support the league or do anything to uplift the league in any way. The only things that they ever talk about are the NFL and the NBA, and the NBA is currently in a season with their worst ratings in decades, and it doesn't make any sense where baseball has been growing over the past few years and the ratings have been increasing over the past few years. And ESPN's just like, that's our redheaded stepchild. We don't care about them. We're going to talk about a league that's dying in the NBA. And we're going to talk about, and I understand talking about the NFL mostly because it's the most popular sport in North America, but baseball again is growing in popularity. Yeah. It's coming close to reaching levels that we saw like in the 1900s, and NBA is doing the opposite of that. So it doesn't make sense to me. And I agree with Rob Manfred. This is probably one of the greatest things Rob Manfred has done during his tenure as commissioner, in my opinion.
Yeah. So to get the quote from that memo that went out to the owners that the Athletic obtained, because Evan Drellich is just like, you know, the guy that does that. The league has, quote, not been pleased with the minimal coverage that MLB has received on ESPN's platforms over the past several years outside of the actual live game coverage. To your point, they don't talk about baseball. And if they do talk about baseball, it's either just to promote the game they have on Sunday, or it's like one of three teams. It's like the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Dodgers. Like, that's it. They don't talk about the sport as a whole. I don't think ESPN even has beat writers for the individual teams anymore. They have a couple people who cover the big teams, right? They've got like Alden Gonzalez does a lot of Dodger stuff. But for the most part, they just have some national guys, Jeff Passan, things like that, who write about it. And Jeff Passan, they discussed moving him to a different sport. That's how much they value MLB.
Right.
So ESPN's side of this, from what we understand from the reporting, they put out a statement last night that was very just political, very just, we've appreciated, blah, 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 blah. But on the reporting from this, ESPN thinks that they are paying above market value. They would have to pay $550 million for each of the next 3 years. They think that because of the size of the other deals, Apple pays $85 million a year for one Friday night game. Roku pays $10 million a year for one Sunday morning game. ESPN thinks they're being overcharged, and they came to the league and asked to pay less. ESPN countered with the Apple deal is not an exclusive, right? There's other games on that night. The Roku Sunday morning deal is not an exclusive. There's other games on that night. ESPN has an exclusive window on Sunday nights. No other game is allowed to be on during that window. They also have the Home Run Derby, and they have exclusive rights to an entire round of the playoffs. MLB said that Sunday Night Baseball ratings were actually up 6% last year from the year before. And MLB said the fact that they have less households carrying cable now than they did when we signed the deal doesn't mean we should accept less money for a smaller platform. It kind of tells them that the future of this is not pay television. The future is this streaming service that they want, that MLB wants to create, where they can pull together rights for 20 or so teams and sell it to everybody directly from the league as every game from every team that we have in this package. So I get it. The end of the day, who do you think is going to come out better here? You think MLB is going to come out better here, or ESPN is going to come out better here?
Honestly, it's tough. That's tough. I don't think either side's going to do great. I mean, like I said, I do agree for MLB pulling out because they weren't getting the proper recognition that they deserved. Even Drew, our buddy Drew, texted me yesterday when he saw the news, and kind of to your point, he said, where are we going to get our news and updates on the Yankees, Dodgers, and Red Sox now? I think that this is kind of going to hurt ESPN because there are a lot of people that are just baseball fans and don't care about the NFL or don't care about the NBA. And if baseball's not going to be on ESPN at all outside of a home run here and there in the top 10 on SportsCenter, then people aren't going to watch ESPN because they want to know about baseball. They don't care to know about the NFL. They don't care to know about the NBA. And it's just, it's, and like you said, there are fewer and fewer houses that have old school cable and are carrying the ESPN channel. And even more are going to drop that now that Sunday Night Baseball may not be a thing anymore. And it's just, and again, to MLB's point about ESPN having more exclusives than Apple and Roku, even the Apple game you can't get on MLB.tv, but the Roku game you can still get on MLB.tv. It's not even that game is not even exclusive to Roku. Like you can watch it on MLB.tv while it's playing. You cannot watch the ESPN game on MLB.tv, and at the same time you can't watch the Apple game either. But
there's other games on at the same time as the Apple game. Yeah,
and so it's been a long time coming because of the way that ESPN has treated Major League Baseball. And it's just, it sucks all around, but I think in the long run, it's going to be good for baseball because if they do find somewhere else to go, they'll probably give baseball the recognition they deserve. Even TBS does a better job with baseball than ESPN does. And TBS isn't even a sports station.
I think that, I think you're going to see a streamer jump in here. I think Amazon is a good bet of a team of a kind of company to jump in. They have NFL games now. I could see them jumping in and being like, hey, Sunday nights, people can only watch the baseball game on Amazon Prime. Like, that's a huge opportunity for them. It just feels like there's more options for MLB here than maybe we're all realizing. And ESPN, they're trying to launch a direct-to-consumer product where you don't need a cable package. And so they're cutting down on inventory. They're cutting down on the ability to have clips and all of that. They could still bid on a new deal, right? Like, we'll find out. The league's going to go and bid this package out. Somebody else could take over could be the spiritual heir of Sunday Night Baseball. They're not going to get the name. I'm sure ESPN owns that. But they could be the spiritual heir. Maybe ESPN gets it at a lower price. I don't know. But it just feels like, one, this sucks. This has been – Sunday Night Baseball has been an institution. It's been around forever. And it kind of sucks that we're going to lose it. I think it's 36 years. This is the 36th season of it. But either way, we'll see what happens. I'm more bullish on the future of MLB than I think ESPN is. And I think that's kind of a consensus to your point. They talk about the NBA and NFL a bunch. And I guess that there's more inventory there because they have more games, but it's still just kind of frustrating how they can't cover all of, like, I'm reminded of what happened to hockey when ESPN stopped covering hockey. They just stopped talking about it. It didn't exist for a while to them. And I'm worried they're going to do that with MLB. And I think that'd be a short-sighted decision on ESPN's part. But kind of moving on from there, a couple of interesting news stories Aaron Boone has signed an extension with the New York Yankees. He was hired part of 2018. He's entering his eighth year as Yankees manager. This two-year extension is for 26 and for 27. I'm sorry, it's for 25, 26, I think. Either way, it would take him through 10 seasons with the club. So do we think that this was a good move to keep Aaron Boone? Because a lot of Yankees fans are pointing out that the two managers before him, Joe Torre and Joe Girardi, both won World Series. In this case, Girardi won, I think, one, and Torre won three. But Boone has not won one. Do we think this was a good move to bring Boone back? Or do we think that they could have just let him coach it out and then found somebody different?
I think that for the Yankees in a vacuum, this was a good move because Aaron Boone I don't think he's the manager there. I think he fills in the role as the manager, but I think that he gets his direction from the front office because it's completely – as somebody who is a former baseball player, there are a lot of things that he does in-game and a lot of changes and moves that he makes that somebody that is a former baseball player would probably not make because it's just – some of them are highly questionable, and it seems like more of the front office is running things from the front office than Aaron Boone is. He's more of a corporate toe-the-line type of guy. He's going to say all the right things. He's going to do everything the front office wants to do. He's going to keep all of his players happy. But I honestly don't know if we have ever even seen Aaron Boone manage a game on his own before at all. So I don't really know how to assess that.
I think some of that's just kind of the way that modern baseball works now, where like there's a lot of collaboration between the front office on like in-game decisions and you know, when to pinch hit for who and that kind of stuff. But I do think he's very good. Like he has the temperament for that New York market. The players like him. He's well respected in the game. I do think the thing you should do when you're trying to figure out, do we keep this guy or not, is think if we let him go, how quickly will he have a job? And I think that if Aaron Boone was not re-signed by the Yankees, he would have a job. He would have his pick of probably four different positions in the next hiring cycle. Like, that's kind of the thing to me, is he's clearly an above average manager by reputation. And the fact that like the defense was bad last year, that's not his fault. It's the players that he's given. But I do feel like he did everything he could to keep that team together and lead those men. And I feel like at this point, why bring an unknown in and ask them to acclimate to coaching in New York for the Yankees when you know Boone can do it? And the problem with the team is not Aaron Boone. He's like, is he perfect? No, no manager is, but he's not the problem in New York. The problem is Mal Steinbrenner just won't build a complete team. And they're really stuck around players that were great in 2017. Cody Bellinger, Paul Goldschmidt, Anthony Rizzo. Like, those aren't Aaron Boone's problems. Those are the front office's problems. He's not been the problem. Keep him here. Keep the stability. Plus, Aaron Judge likes him. Judge is your captain. Aaron Judge likes him. Keep Aaron Boone.
No, yeah, I do agree that Boone is definitely not the problem in New York, and he is 100% a guy that keeps the clubhouse happy. And like I said, he says all the right things. He does all the right things in the public eye. It's just some of the moves that he makes in game are questionable. But yeah, I also agree he'd have a job pretty quickly. But so it's just I don't see the Yankees, with a combination of Aaron Boone as the manager and the lack of complete construction that Hal Steinbrenner does of the roster, I don't see the Yankees winning a World Series anytime soon.
There you go. Fun extension news that came up here a little bit, not on the rundown, surprising you with this. Apparently the Athletics, I almost said Oakland, guys, Athletics have had conversations with outfielder Lawrence Butler on an extension, a couple other young players too. But signing Lawrence Butler to an early extension, yes, no, how do you feel? I'm for it. I 100% am for it.
No, yeah, I'm for it too. And I think it'll work out for both sides, because when you see players take these early extensions, they're on a much more team-friendly deal. I mean, you look at Ozzy Albies and Ronald Acuna Jr. with the Atlanta Braves. They both got early extensions, and they were highly team-friendly. And Spencer Strider, didn't he get an early extension too?
He did. He did. Yeah. He got like 6 years, 75 after his first season in the majors.
Yeah.
And Michael Harris got one. Michael Harris is best friends with Lawrence Butler. Michael Harris got one. So I imagine they're going to be competing with one another to see who has the better extension. But here's the thing on Butler. People say he's streaky. No, he figured it out.
Yeah.
Okay. First half last year, he batted 211 with a 686 OPS and 9 homers in 64 games. Second half, he batted 300 with an 898 OPS and 13 homers. He finished with a 262 average, 22 homers, 18 stolen bases in 125 games, and 3 WAR. They've already signed Brent Rooker to an extension. If you get a full season out of Lawrence Butler, he can be a 25-25 dude. Playing right field, he can fill in center if you need it. They have a good defender in J.J. Bleday, but he can fill in center, playing right field, a 25-25 guy, you locking him up into Las Vegas like they did with Brent Rooker. I'm for this. I legitimately think you should lock him up. I think Zach Gelof at second is a guy that could potentially click, right? I think while I'm hesitant on Mason Miller because he had that UCL issue when he was starting, I don't hate some of these ideas of extending some of these dudes. And I think Lawrence Butler is the number one guy you've got to get locked up because he could explode. The reason you do an early extension is to lock a guy up before he breaks out. And I think Lawrence Butler is right there.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you. I don't think he's streaky. I think he figured it out also. And I think, like I said, I think this is going to be great for both sides. And it's good to see the Athletics do something like this, because it's not something you normally see them do. And that's a good move forward for them. And speaking of a good move forward, we have breaking news.
Should do this, Miami. Oh, wait, what? Oh, breaking news.
We have breaking news from Jeff Pizan. The New York Yankees' antiquated facial hair policy is finally dead.
Wait, they made Devin Williams shave and then they got rid of it?
Yep.
They made Devin Williams shave that beard and then they stopped doing this. What are we doing, people?
Yankees players are now allowed to have well-groomed beards.
Wow. Oh, it's a statement from the Yankees, too.
Yeah.
Wow.
This is a great day in the history of baseball.
It is. I can't believe Devin Williams had to shave first, though. Like, really? Right.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But still, okay, what a day. I am glad this finally happened. My goodness, that was such a dumb policy. And I am so glad it's over. But seeing this reminds me, there is a signing that we forgot to talk about.
Uh-oh.
Andrew Heaney to the Pirates.
Oh, yep.
Look at the Pirates. 1 year, $5 million. There's a little bit of incentives in there. I think you can get like additional $3 million bucks in incentives. But here's the thing. He's pitched, like in Texas the last 2 years, he pitched 307 and a third innings the last 2 years. He made 59 starts over two seasons, 66 appearances. This is not a good deal for the Pirates, right? Like $5.25 million guaranteed for a year of 34-year-old Andrew Heaney is not a bad deal. He wasn't a world beater, right, with Texas. His ERA, I think, combined was 4.22. But, like, this is not a bad deal. Also, that 1 year he had in L.A. with the Dodgers, 16 starts, a 3.10 ERA. It's L.A., come on. But, like, this is not a bad deal.
No, not at all. It's a good deal for the Pirates. It's nice to see them going out and doing something other than just bringing in Tommy Pham. And it's going to be a good addition to their rotation where – you know, they
help all the young guys.
Right. And he's going to be a good innings eater and eat a lot of innings like he has over the past few years, as long as he can stay healthy at 34 years old. And that's going to help Paul Skeens tremendously with his development also.
Am I weird for not hating this rotation? Paul Skeens, Mitch Keller, Jared Jones, Andrew Heaney, Bailey Falter. I don't hate that rotation. I really don't hate that rotation.
No,
we're going to cover them in like a week or two when we get to the Pirates. But like, that's not a bad rotation. The problem is, I mean, they just they have questions everywhere else on the roster, I feel like. But that's not bad.
Yeah, no, it's certainly not a bad rotation. There are definitely worse rotations in Major League Baseball than the Pittsburgh Pirates, it's still going to be hard for them to compete.
Yeah. Okay. So going from what is a bad rotation to what could be a very good rotation if everybody stays healthy. Let's talk about our projected AL West winning Texas Rangers. We always start with the lineups. But I think this time, let's start with the pitching staff because that is the real story of this team. They're 1-5, and I'm going to quibble with the order a little bit here. They're 1-5 on Fangraphs. They've got Nathan Eovaldi as the number 1, Jacob DeGrom as the number 2. Let's maybe flip those around a little bit. John Gray as the 3, Tyler Molly as the 4th. Cody Bradford is your only lefty and the 5th starter in your rotation. And then in the minors, you've got Kumar Rocker, Jack Leiter, and then a bunch of NRIs, including Adrian Hauser. You know, like, this is if, and this is a giant caveat with this rotation, if they are healthy, this is the second best rotation in the division, even though Houston exists, because of the ceilings of Jacob DeGrom, the ceilings of, you know, Eovaldi and Gray. They're not Mariners quality. Nobody is. But this is a very good rotation if they are healthy.
Oh, 100%. And like you said, that is a big if. And I'm going to add like 14 more bigs on there because it's Jacob DeGrom has fewer starts since the beginning of 2021 than he is years old. And so that's one of my favorite weird stats of this decade is that, but he made 3 starts last year, 10 2/3 innings. And so, and Fangraphs has him projected to make 26 starts this year and 132 innings. I doubt, but, yeah, it's. I think that's why they have Nathan Eovaldi as the number 1 is because he's going to make more starts than Jacob DeGrom. But
he's going to qualify for the ERA title, and that's the thing. Yeah. He may be the only one on the team that does. But
yeah,
I do like the fact that amongst your depth starters are two very well regarded former top prospects in Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter, like two guys that I think realistically could give you over 100 plus innings each if you needed it. And so, like, it's listed as a 5-man rotation. It's really kind of like a 7-man rotation. And you have to think that you have enough quality. The question is going to be workloads in all these guys, right? John Gray, what can he do coming off of injury? Jacob DeGrom, what can he do coming off of injury? Like, workloads and stuff. But when they're all healthy and effective, which, again, giant if, this is one of the better rotations. And the ceiling of this team is entirely predicated off of this rotation.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think that this rotation has one of the highest ceilings of any rotation in Major League Baseball. Not the highest, but one of the highest. But at the same time, it has the lowest floor of any rotation in Major League
Baseball. Of any non-White Sox rotation. Of any contender, right?
Correct, yeah.
The bullpen's another really interesting situation here because they added a bunch of pieces to the bullpen. They built a bullpen out of scratch, and then they lost everybody, right? Kirby Yates, they got him after he rehabbed his Tommy John with Atlanta. Amazing year last year. He's now a Dodger. Jose Leclerc was the former closer. He moved to a setup role. He is now with the Athletics. They have 5 free agent signings in a trade in the back end of their rotation. Of their bullpen. Chris Martin, 38-year-old Chris Martin, signed to be the closer. Robert Garcia acquired from the Nationals in the trade that moved Nate Lowe or Lau, whichever one he is. He's the setup man. They've got Jacob Webb, free agent from Baltimore. Sean Armstrong, free agent from the Cubs. Hobie Milner, free agent from Milwaukee, soft-tossing, funky lefty. Luke Jackson, slider man, free agent. He was with the Giants and then traded to the Braves in the Jorge Soler deal last year. Dane Dunning's their long man and a swing starter, right? Is this bullpen enough, or are they going to have to go acquire a bunch of, they also signed, ancient Jesse Chavez as an NRI, who's probably going to get cut 3 weeks into spring training. And they're going to sign with Atlanta to start the season and put up an ERA of 2.5. what he does. Is this bullpen good enough to take some of the weight off of the rotation so that you can keep those guys healthy?
No, I don't think it's good enough. I think that they do need to go out and get one more guy. I think they need to go out and get a guy that they had last year.
David Robertson.
Yep. It's just absolutely insane to me that he is still a free agent after what he did in 2024, especially for the Texas Rangers. They saw it firsthand. Why?
They know him. Yeah.
It's
now I will say the one thing there, if they spend, they paid $1.5 million on his buyout for this year on his option. If they spend more than $5.5 million, they go into the CBT. I'm guessing that's the only reason they haven't done it. They'd have to find some salary to cut somewhere to do this. Part of it's just the top end of these contracts is wild. We'll get to that. It's all on the position player side, other than Jacob DeGrom making $40 million this year. I guess Eovaldi's making 22, but still on his new deal. We'll get to it on the position player side, but like, it's got to be a money thing. It's got to be a money thing. They just don't want to go into the CBT. They've got like $5 million to spend before they break the first threshold. And they just don't want to do it.
Yeah, I don't know why. I don't know why teams aren't just offering. I guess he doesn't want it. I don't know. But at this point in the offseason, as games have started, like, give David Robertson $2 million. Give him $1 million. And just put him on a 1-year contract.
Hey, here's $3.5 million. Come play for us. You're already making $1.5 million on a buyout. Here's $3.5 million more.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. Okay. Getting to that lineup, they have the $500 million infield of Marcus Semien and Corey Seager in the middle infield. Third base, Josh Jung, fully recovered from his injury. On the other side, they swapped out Nate Lowe or Lau with Jake Berger. And now their DH is going to be Jock Peterson. They got Berger via trade from the Marlins. They signed Jock Peterson away from their World Series victim, Diamondbacks, in free agency. Infield, I feel good about the infield. Outfield, Evan Carter in center, Wyatt Langford in left, Adolis Garcia, provided he can figure out why he struggled last year, in right. Leody Taveras is probably the most qualified fourth outfielder in baseball. Like, the position player group, oh yeah, Kyle Higashioka came in as the backup catcher. He can mash a bit. Ezekiel Duran and Josh Smith, I think both those guys can play everywhere. Literally, the Josh Smith card in MLB The Show has eligibility at every position but catcher.
Wow.
Yeah, because he's played every position but catcher. He can play all four infield positions, including shortstop. He can play all three outfield positions. I think he's pitched in a game once. Like, this is probably the best position player lineup, or the best position player group in the division. I think almost pretty easily to say. I like them over Houston. Houston may have a guy or two better than them. Like, I know you're big on
Yordan,
their DH versus anybody else's DH, but like, top to bottom, this is the best lineup in the division, right?
Oh, yeah, I agree. I think that the health is going to play a huge factor in this lineup as well, especially with Corey Seager. Corey Seager hasn't been able to put a full season together in quite some time. And I did have a question. You know, we've had an issue with the Rangers first baseman's name pronunciation. So is their new first baseman Jake Berger or Jake Berger?
It's Berger. It's Berger. No, it's actually the question's not Berger or Berger. It's Jake Berger or Jake Royale with cheese.
Ah, God,
that's the question. But no. I don't mind the addition. I always find it weird that the Marlins were trying to use him at third. I do think putting him at first the whole time is going to be better. I'm not as concerned about them losing any one guy, simply because they've got such high quality backups in the outfield. Leody Taveras is a great defender. He can be in center. I do think you lose some offense if you lose Adolis Garcia, right? If he can figure it out again. They fired their hitting coach their hitting coach didn't get fired. He left to go somewhere else. But Wyatt Langford, I think, is going to be a star in left. Speed, power. Yeah. He can play center foot if he needs to. You know, he can steal bases. He can hit for power. I think he had it inside the Parker last year. He also got struck out on like a pitch a foot off the plate. The pitch, the farthest off the plate, that was called a strike in all of baseball last year. That kind of sucks for him. I like the Rangers a lot. It's just a matter of, can the rotation stay healthy enough? And I think that's the big question, is do they have enough horses in the rotation, not only to get to October, but then to be healthy in October to make a postseason run? But there's nobody in baseball I'd rather face least in a playoff game than Jacob DeGrom.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. And I agree, the lineup is great, 1 through 9. I really like the additions of Jock Peterson and Jake Berger. I think those were both great additions. Jock Peterson, especially in the playoffs against right-handed pitching, he's going to just feast. He's going to feed families in Texas with his home runs that he's going to hit at new Globe Life Field. But, yeah, it's going to be fun to watch the Rangers this year for sure. And they're going to be an exciting team. And just I hope for their sake that the rotation can stay healthy.
Yeah. Barring some sort of crazy news over the weekend, we're back on Monday, folks. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell so you know when we drop that next episode. And until next time, this has been First Pitch.